Coming up on your favorite podcast, Ty is going to join me just in a few minutes, actually. It's going to be great. Cannot wait to have him here because we're going to talk Ryder Cup golf. I know that we have not had Ty on in the last few weeks. He's been very busy, which he'll catch us up on a little bit when we have him here. But it's going to be great to talk Ryder Cup golf with him for the next hour. I was out at Whistling Straits this week, had a great time with the gal. I'll break down the whole thing. I walk the whole course. I have a chance to tell you a little bit about what I think from a spectator's perspective. Also, just what I think it'll look like from a golfer's perspective. I have some thoughts on the teams, have some thoughts on the captains and the setup and all that jazz, and we'll get to it shortly here. So it's Ty, it's me, it's Ryder Cup Talk, and it's next on the podcast.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out.
Hey, it's the Tim Anderson Podcast. I'm Tim Anderson, and that over there is my buddy Ty, my main man Tyus. Hello.
Hey, Tim. It's been too long, but what a joyous occasion to come together to talk. I'm sure it's no spoiler for anyone. We're going to be talking Ryder Cup golf, and that's pretty much it, and that's a good place to be.
What do you mean? We're not talking about the RSM Classic? No, that's in a couple months. Sorry. Yeah, we won't be getting into that or whatever else was in the fall season, although good for Max Homa to get a win to start the new season. Off and running, Max Homa winning in Southern California. I won money off that last week, so that was sweet.
Every year I pull up my ESPN app and I realize that they're playing that quickly after the season ends. And I get the stark reminder that there is no off season in golf. It is just wild.
It's
and,
11
and people
days.
Show up to play. Yeah. People show up to play. You know, you'd think more players would take a couple weeks off, but nope. Rahm was there. I mean, it could be a tune up for the Ryder Cup, but people show up to that Napa tournament every year.
They do. They do turn up to that, which I think has a little bit more to do with corporate stuff, don't you think? Like, just guys who have corporate obligations. Of course, hanging out in wine country, it's probably a good, you know, a good make good for the gal if you're on tour to go hang out in Napa Valley for a week or so. I'm sure they don't mind that either.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it's got to have something to do with the fact that it's Napa Valley in September. And yeah, you're gonna tell your gal, hey, pack your bags, we're going to Napa Valley, and by the way, I'm gonna play a couple rounds of golf while we're out there. Maybe
yeah.
Four.
Maybe I'll miss the cut, maybe not, or maybe I'll take home a fat check like Max Homa did. That's the one thing I will say about the fall season is, like, it's nice, it's good. I do wish, and I love golf every week. I do love golf every week. Don't get me wrong. I love that there's something to watch. And that six-week break that they take in November is a little bit of a show hole for me. Like, there's nothing for me to watch. Like, I look forward to the weekend, the weekday thing. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I get over it with football.
That's true. When you have football on Sundays, that's nice. And college on Saturdays helps. That does help. You're right. They could stand to take a month off and then get back into it. I wouldn't object to that. And, you know, it's okay to miss it a little bit. I kind of agree with that, too. But there you go. All right. We haven't had a chance to get together here in a couple of weeks because you have been very busy. Fatherhood yet again. Is this three?
This is three, so now we got boy, girl, girl. We had a little girl, Kennedy, a week ago, Sunday.
What a great name.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, so Kennedy is a week old. Mom's doing well. That's fantastic. Let me ask you this, because I'm obviously I'm not a father. No kids. Easier for the third time, or is it getting harder?
Way easier. The third one, you're pretty much just in survival mode. You know, keep the kid alive, keep the diapers changed every so often.
You mean the first one?
You don't stress yourself
out. You said about the first one?
The first one, you're so excited about everything and everything's so new that it's the second one was a little bit, you know, we got to do this again. But now it's like we feel like we're pros. So that could change once the sleep schedule gets a little bit, you know, interrupted. A lot of people say, well, you must not be sleeping right now, but babies sleep all the time. I'm reminded every time you know it going into it, you tell yourself babies sleep all the time, and then you're still shocked that that baby sleeps all the time. So we're getting good sleep right now, but that will change.
That will. So what's the, what changes? What I got, I, not that I need to know this, but I like to know what changes.
Well, some babies don't sleep as much right away, or they sleep all day and then want to be up all night. But most kids are going to sleep the first few weeks. But then as soon as they start to get a little bit more aware, they can, they're aware visually of their surroundings. They can pick up their head. They can move their arms. They know what they're doing a little bit. Then they start not wanting to go to bed. And then it's, you know, walking the kid around in your arms for an hour to get them to go to sleep, only for them to wake up 45 minutes later and have to do it again. So you're kind of at the mercy of when they choose to sleep. But again, babies usually are going to sleep like 21 hours a day. So chances are you're not going to be up a whole lot at night. You know, you might be up a couple times, but it's short lived. Right now, she eats and goes right back to sleep. And I think that's fairly common. But yeah, there'll come a time, and really you sometimes battle that all the way until they're 2 years old, laying in their bed, laying on the ground with your arm through the slots of their crib holding their hand, because they will only sleep if you're holding their hand. Lots of things like that. So it's, you know, it could get rough, but in general, a lot of people have told me the third one, you're just pretty good at stuff by then.
Do you guys have defined roles at this point? Like, is there certain things that fall under Kayla's purview or certain things that fall under your purview? Kind of, how does this work? Like, are you on diaper detail? Are you on 2 a.m. feeding detail? How does this, how do you divvy up the responsibilities at this stage?
Well, we came upon the conclusion that Kayla's going to do the breastfeeding this time around. So she stuck with that. I did the first two, and yeah, no, I'm just kidding. But no, she might disagree. She's probably going to, I'm probably going to hear about this later, but we tend to try to switch off. It's kind of a, every other diaper thing, if again, if we're awake. But it's difficult for the woman, unless she really wants to draw the man in, because again, I'm gonna get in trouble for all of this.
This is, here we go, right down misogyny road here. Here we go. It's coming. We're going right down it, but that's fine.
When a woman's breastfeeding, they have to wake up anyway. So a lot of times, I'm lucky enough, my wife will not wake me up. She usually will just wake me up if she's been up a couple hours and take my hand and say, you're in.
You're kind of thing.
But
the old hot tag in wrestling right there. That's what that is. You know, a friend of mine had a philosophy when he was having kids, like, hey, get the kid to age 5 and I'll take it from there. You ever thought about pitching that? See it how she would handle that one.
It's an interesting concept. Yeah, well,
you'd be in on that, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you be in on that? Like, you do all the fun stuff of fatherhood, age 0 to 5, but everything else, like, she does, and then you just, it's the hot tag at age 5. Like, you're in now for all the extracurricular activities, all the parent conferences, everything after that.
Yeah, being a dad is a little bit anticlimactic, especially with a boy for the first one, because you're thinking it's going to be baseball all the time and they're going to want to play hockey and watch sports with you. And then they're into Cocomelon and, you know, things of that nature. So but now that Bradley's 6, he does love to play sports. He likes a couple other things, too. But. Yeah, like I said, it just takes a few years before that really happens. So
he's got a set of clubs, yeah?
Oh, and have a catch kind of thing. Hmm. What was that?
He has a set of clubs, doesn't he?
He does. He's a lefty.
Lefty.
But he more so likes to drive the car, which I know you're not a big fan of kids driving the car.
Not a big fan of that yet, I got to tell you, Ty.
We're pretty careful. We just let him use the gas, so no big deal.
Well, good. Yeah, who needs brakes? Yeah, who needs to stop it? This is you are a disgrace. You are everything that's wrong with public golf right now. No, I'm just kidding. No.
Oh, I know.
No. I think that's great.
I want to hear all about your Ryder Cup experience, but I do want to say I played golf a couple times in the last couple weeks, surprisingly. I was in a tournament on Friday, and this is not cocking myself up. It's just it's the best golf I've ever played in my life. Played at in a charity tournament at Greenhaven.
Okay.
And played with three guys that were okay. They were probably, you know, mid 15s, low 20s handicap, and we ended up shooting 14 under, which is pretty good.
All right. 15.
And, but I mean, with a scramble, you most people can chip in a scramble.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you'd have to be pretty poor not to chip in at all in a scramble.
Absolutely.
And I played lights out. I drove the eyes off the ball, as you would say. I don't know. It's on the front. It's one of the earlier holes. It's a dogleg right. We had the cart told us 330 to the front.
That's two.
And I drove it 7 feet from the pin, and I made the eagle putt. So little natural eagle there, which was fun. Hole number four, which is the par, or no, three, which is the par five, right?
No, three, it goes, so there's a long four to open pretty straight ahead, kind of a handshake four. And then there's that short four, which I think you're talking about, which is 330 with a hard dog leg to the right. And then there's a par three third that goes a little down the hill, about a buck 60.
Yep.
Four is the par five that loops all the way around the water. It reminds me of Bay Hill, right? That par five at Bay Hill where it's just a loop around the water. You can go the long way or you can try to cut as much of it off as you can.
Yep. So I roll up to the third hole. We started on eight, roll up to the third hole, and the sponsor at the hole said, "How you playing?" And I just said, "Really well." And stuck it to about 4 feet on that. We made the putt. And then we get to four, the par five around the water that everyone knows. If you've ever driven on Highway 10 going west, you look to the right and you see that big pond and that par five that wraps around the pond. That hole is my arch nemesis, but we had a pretty good drive from our group. I did go last in that scenario. And I, for the first time in my life, I've never even tried. I took on the furthest part of the water, which was left of the 150 marker.
Yeah, it's a bomb.
And I gave it everything I had. We figured to the 150 marker, or we zapped to the 150 marker. It was 315 carry. So left of that was a little bit longer than that. And I hit it with everything I had, and it took one bounce and landed right in the middle of the fairway, and we had 121 to the pin.
Wow.
It was awesome.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
Yep. I know. It was fun.
Considering, I'm hitting it 230 at best. I mean, I'm jealous to watch you hit the ball that far. So the driver, I was just going to ask you. So the driver switch that we made middle of the season, that's the game changer right now.
Yeah, the extra stiff shaft has made all of the difference.
That is
game over. The great part is I hit the ball straight no matter what. I just have to start it on the right line. That's all it is. And I can do that all day long, right?
Yeah.
Would much rather have that than have a case of the rights and lefts, and I have completely gotten rid of that. And that was not practice time. That was just equipment. So
I will let John know. I will give him a fully positive report because it's clearly brought you back to life in your golf game.
It has. Very refreshed feeling. Maybe part of it's being a new dad. Who knows? I'll give that a little bit of a run. But I am sitting here. I have the TV on in front of me, and I'm watching Europeans. I watched it live this morning, watching them throw their cheese heads into the stands, and I just want to puke. That is a disgusting display of bribery,
pandering.
I won't have it. So,
are you suggesting that they are pandering to the crowd here in the United States, in Wisconsin?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm not a fan of it. So,
in fairness to them, though, they didn't get the big European contingent here to the United States because of the COVID travel rules. So they're definitely facing a partisan crowd. They're fighting uphill here, so they have to buy whatever they can.
I know, but do you really think it's all Wisconsinites in the stands?
No, because I met a couple from Ireland yesterday, and I also and several other states.
People from all over the country in those stands.
100%. That is true. Yeah. I saw a lot of different license plates out there.
That's what the Ryder Cup is. People travel. So I want to hear about your trip. I mean, if we're doing a Ryder Cup special and you were on site for a practice round of the Ryder Cup, I think we should spend some time on that. So
yeah,
what was that experience like? What did you see? What did you like? What was the vibe?
Well, we like to do a little filler here prior to the pod. You know how we're doing this. This is that nice 15-minute buffer before we really get into the nuts and bolts of the pod. But this is a perfect transition and a nice job by you. You're really understanding this broadcasting thing. Like, you are really good at this, Tyus. You're getting better and better every time we do this. It was a, first of all, It's a 5-hour drive for us, so it's not the end of the world to get out there. 5 hours there, 5 hours back, and we kind of were on site for. We went out there Monday night. We were on site all day Tuesday. Came back late Tuesday night and so I wanted, because I had some things to do here, wanted to be ready for the pod, wanted to talk about it. The golf course is. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. It is a ballpark that you cannot say you've seen anywhere in the United States. I've played, you know, and I was lucky. I've played Paso Tiempo this year. I've been to Erin Hills for the U.S. Open. You know, obviously you and I have spent time at TPC Twin Cities, a PGA venue. You know, I had a chance to take a look at different holes at Spyglass Hill during my 17-mile drive in California. You know, you have a chance to see venues, right? And you know, I've been down to Branson, I've seen Ozark National, I've seen Payne's Valley, the Classic, the Quarry, all these courses. There's nothing like Whistling Straits. Nothing. I mean, there's nothing in the United States like it. There might be something like it in Ireland, there might be something like it in Scotland, but there's nothing like it in the United States. And it's an interesting test of golf. And the weather looks like it's going to be not an advantage, I think, for the Americans. I think the weather might prove to be a great equalizer. Yesterday when we were there, it was 60 degrees off the lake with 20-mile-an-hour winds, and they're forecasting a lot of that for this weekend too. So I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. And I was certainly – the size of the ballpark is just – it blows you away, the size and scope of the place. It's just gigantic.
Something I've heard a couple times is that it feels like you're on the moon. The crazy part, I mean, really, the thing I love about that golf course is you really can, I mean, I'm sure it's much different in person, but you do get that vibe off the TV too, right? You can sense that it's a special place and that they essentially moved mountains to create it, right? They started with a flat piece of land and turned it into that. That's kind of the crazy part is you see some of the European sites and really, again, this is also a special thing, and they just built the golf course into what the land already was, right? So they walked the land and dreamed up a golf course. Well, they started with a blank slate next to the lake for this golf course, and that's also kind of a special deal. The one thing I'm wondering is, did it feel forced in any way? Because that's not requisite of what the lay of the land is in Wisconsin. And it's not a historic golf course. Herb Kohler really forced Wisconsin onto the national golf scene with his courses, right? So he really wanted Wisconsin to be a showpiece for national golf, and he's accomplished that. I mean, what was kind of the vibe? Like, did you feel like it was natural? Where did you feel like you were?
Well, it definitely didn't feel natural. It didn't feel like I was in Wisconsin. It felt like honestly, you feel like you're in Wisconsin, and then you turn right into the parking lot. So it's really weird because it's cornfields and flat land, even on the frontage road leading to the golf course. And then it's like a reveal. Like, it you pull into this parking lot, and you get out and you go through this little grove of trees, and it just like explodes in front of you. It's not like when you pull up to, you know, a golf course where we go, right? When we go see even at TPC Twin Cities, or we go up to the Quarry or Giants Ridge, what you see is sort of what you get, right? You see a lot of hills by the Quarry at Giants Ridge. You see a lot of that sort of thing, right? And you see a lot of that, like when I went and played Top of the Rock, it looked exactly like Top of the Rock felt like it belonged in the area. Like, it made sense because there were hills and there were lakes, and everything that you thought made sense was there. Whistling Straits is like, it reminds me of like Dorothy Gale in The Wizard of Oz. So like, the tornado has happened. She's in black and white. She opens the door to go outside and it's in color, and it's Munchkin Land. Right? It's the land of Oz. That's what this felt like to me, because we have cornfields and flat land. We go through a door, and here we are in this amazing place of architecture. So there are great pros to the golf course, tons of pros, and also some cons. And I think those things are going to manifest themselves as the week plays out. But I will tell you, it's a destination. When you show up there, you're like, wow, it's something. There are holes there that give you that take your breath away, especially on the lake. Like you go to 12, 15, or 12, 17, then there's 13, I think. That little stretch, and then eight's on the lake as well. Seven's on the lake. Those are great golf holes, man. They're really something.
For those who have not been to Whistling Straits, I have not been to Whistling Straits, but if you're wondering, is it a private, is it public? It is a public golf course. I don't think they have the structure of a private golf course that people would, you know, there wouldn't be the access for the membership groups, but it's a public golf course. For those wondering, it's about $410 to play. I don't think it's a waitlist course. I think you can kind of get in, you know, a month out. Again, $410 for the green fee, $50-$60 for a caddy, and recommended tip $50 for the caddy. So start saving your money, or just win your fantasy football league, and you too can play where the pros play.
There are four courses, obviously, in Kohler, and all four of them, I think, are ranked in the Golf Digest Top 100 of public courses that just came out in this issue this week. Whistling Straits is third. The Irish course, which is really, I felt bad because the Irish course is freaking beautiful. And it is on the out. The 36 holes are laid out like this. The Straits course is kind of outlying the property. So it kind of perimeters the property. And the Irish course is sort of in the middle. And so the Irish course right now is basically just like where some hospitality tents are set up and where some, you know, TV towers are set up. And it's serving as sort of a walkway on some areas for, and they're using a lot of their cart paths to help people get around. That course is immaculate. Like, that course is really stunning. And my wife came away going, I'd want to play this too. And that's number 47. So we're talking about the 47th best public golf course in the country. And it's basically just a walking path on this course right now, because Whistling Straits, the Straits course where they're playing, is the third highest rated. But then there's also Black Wolf Run has two courses, which is just up the road from this place as well. So great golf in Kohler, Wisconsin.
Well, Wisconsin is really becoming a national golf destination. Which 100%. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Sconnies. Of course, I say that, you know, with a friendly elbow, but it just is the truth. I don't think Minnesota can really. Minnesota has a lot of private golf courses, but Wisconsin has certainly taken over the public golf course scene in terms of the Midwest. I really think of any of the states in the Midwest, I don't think there's a question right now with Sand Valley, Erin Hills, Whistling Straits.
And Mammoth Dunes is that they built. Let's see, the guy who runs Bandon, he's basically turning Wisconsin into Bandon in the Midwest. They're building the Lido right now. That course will be a top 50 course when it's done. You have Mammoth Dunes, you have Sand Valley. I drove past Century World on my way in, and that place looked amazing. I want to play there very badly. What a cool golf course. Lasonia Links is fantastic. Plus, they've got all these other little gems out there, like Thornberry Creek, which is a course that the Green Bay Packers play on. But the LPGA has had an event at Thornberry Creek for the last decade, and that's a pretty little Parkland golf course. Like, that's awesome. And it's just, and Troy Byrne is in Hudson, right on the border. And I think Troy Byrne is fantastic. If you have not played Troy Byrne in the Wisconsin, Minnesota, kind of in the metro area here, you got to play Troy Byrne. What an awesome golf course. They've got so many great courses.
Right. It makes me jealous just thinking about all these great golf courses they have out there. Like I said, you got to save your money a little bit, but, you know, the one thing I've learned, especially this year, no question, you pay for what you get. I do not think that, you know, when you play a golf course that's four times the price, $400 versus $100, it's 100 times nicer, or it's 10 times nicer. It's not, It's not twice as, I mean, you come away appreciating what you just played and what the money and the thought and the everyday work that goes into keeping that golf course a $400 golf course. So I'm a big proponent of that. And again, it's not an everyday thing. I don't run in those circles. Can't afford to play it every day, but if you can play it once, I bet you'll appreciate it.
So. You might be able to cut, because I'm trying to think of who could walk Sand Valley with me, because the gal has a little gift card for me at Sand Valley, and I'm like, maybe we could pool that together. You and I could go get a little Sand Valley action in here at some point. We'd have to walk it, though, because it's a walking
course. I
would
make the Sand Valley trip, yep.
I figured you'd be in for that. Good man. Yep. We'll have to talk about that. But the golf course, so here's the pros. The pros of the golf course. It's visually on TV, it's going to be stunning, right? On TV, it's green. It looks fantastic. I think on TV, it's going to make for a great watch. People who are watching the Ryder Cup this weekend are going to be enthralled by some of the holes. They're going to love the Lake Michigan shots. It's really, and the wind, I think the wind is going to wreak havoc. If the wind pops up to 20-25 like it did yesterday and like it did today for the practice round, you will see some very interesting golf getting played. A lot of stingers off the tee. A lot of people hitting drivers in places where they wouldn't normally hit a driver. I think it's going to make for really interesting golf. Like, I think the eighth hole is a par five that I was watching guys reach into with driver and iron or driver and a fairway in a hybrid or something. I think Morikawa went driver hybrid into that. But I think if the wind shifted, that was sort of downwind. If the wind shifts, that's going to become a really nasty hole. Like, that becomes a hole that they can't get to into, I think. So it'll be interesting to see where the wind goes and how much it gusts, but I think it will play a factor. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I also think that, cons, I think it hurts short hitters. There's some guys that I think are going to be in trouble with this course. It doesn't suit in Ian Poulter's game per se. I mean, I say that all the time, but Poulter ends up playing well in the Ryder Cup. Other con here, it's not a great venue for crowds. It's just not. That's just my view of it. Now, they got a buttload of people there yesterday, and they built a big grandstand, but they really only were able to build big enough grandstands on like three holes. There's not a lot of great places to watch holes. That's a problem.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's, you heard the no laying up guys say after their, which if you hadn't, again, no free ads, we love to say that. But if you haven't seen their 4-part series on the Ryder Cup, it's really, really good stuff. They've been working on it for 2 years. They got done playing Hazeltine and they said, you know what? With all due respect, it kind of felt like just another golf course. But Hazeltine can host fans, right?
Yep.
They've built that infrastructure around there. They have the parking lots. They have the space around it. I don't know what they said. They bought hundreds of acres around there 20, 30 years ago, knowing that they wanted to be on this national golf stage. And the Ryder Cup kind of fits perfectly into that, because there's a reason they didn't play the Ryder Cup last year. You need fans on site. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's why it's great having someone on site, because when you watch on TV, you don't really get a good representation, at least not yet, of what that's looking like as far as how many fans and what's their view going to be like, and are they going to be, how close are they going to be to the action, because that matters with Ryder Cup venues. But again, going back to Hazeltine, I think Hazeltine did a great job of that. And even though the players, especially the European players, weren't totally enthralled with the golf course, that happens a lot when you lose, but we're getting it back, and that's probably a big reason, is because of our ability to host the masses.
Yeah, I don't think Hazeltine on its surface is the most interesting golf course in the history of the world. There are not a lot of holes at Hazeltine that stand out to me. Like, I can't tell you. I know there's a hole that's on the lake there that I think, Lake Hazeltine or whatever, that is a nice hole. It's a good hole of golf. I think that's the one Reed holed out on. But there's not a lot of holes that make me go like, oh, geez, that's brilliant architecture. But what it does do is it provides you some amphitheaters where you can get fans to circle the green, or you can get fans on both sides of the fairway. You can get grandstand structures in a lot of areas where there are par threes and things like that. You just can't do that at Whistling Straits. Like, there's not one hole where you can get fans on both sides. Like, that, it's just not going to happen. There's not a flat spot anywhere. So everywhere you walk as a fan is an awkward step, is a ginger step, is you got to be very careful. I talked to Solly about this, actually, when I bumped into him. We had a chance to speak for a minute or two. He was like, "Are you tired yet?" And I was like, "Yep, I am." Because I think we were at about 18,000 steps at that point. Because to get from one end of the golf course to the other, there's no like easy way to do that. And that's one thing, too, that the old courses, the old Parkland-style courses like Hazeltine can give you. Hazeltine can give you a chance to cut from 4 to 8 really quickly. Or they can get you around back to the, you know, to the front side fairly quickly. There's no real way to do that at Whistling Straits. There's just, you have to take the long walk to the other side of the golf course if you're going to get there. It's tough. It's a tough walk, and it's a really tough walk. And I think somebody will sprain an ankle. Somebody will break a bone. I think that will happen in the stands this week because I just don't know how when, and we were there for a Tuesday practice round, and there were plenty of people there. What's going to happen when there's 45, 50,000 people there?
Right, I'm on the edge of my seat to hear the answer to this. Having been there, you are well on record being worried about the U.S. team. After being at the Tuesday practice round, has that, you hinted a little bit at the strengths, you know, that might be catered at this golf course, but have you changed your mind? Are you still all on Team Europe as far as predictions for who's going to win this week? Because I might shock you with my opinion here.
I'm still on Team Europe. Even with the driving deficiencies, and they do have it. Matthew Fitzpatrick isn't long. Poulter's not long. Paul Casey's not super long. He's not bad, but he's not super long. I understand that. Like, I get those shortcomings. But what they have are just... But, you know, Poulter's never been long. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, he's always the shortest guy in the group. Always. But it's never been about length in the Ryder Cup. It's always been about intangibles. It's always been about how well do you partner with people. And you can hide guys. You really can. Like, if you don't think Poulter long enough is straight enough off the tee or long enough, you don't play him in foursomes. Play him in four ball, where if he contributes a couple holes in the round and he's paired with a good partner, then it works. Then it's fine. I've always thought that I never felt like length was a real prodigious factor in this tournament, and I'm still going to stand by that. I think Europe has the better chemistry. I think Harrington has done a... Like, you watched him yesterday, and you just feel like he's got a firm command on his guys. Like, the guys follow him. The whole cheesehead thing today, you can tell he's been like thinking about psychology. I love what he's done with the bags. Little things like this. Did you see these numbers that are on the European bags? That represents what number player they are in the history of European Ryder Cups. So like Bernd Wiesberger is 164 because he's the last guy in. 164th player in the history of the Ryder Cup for Europe. So like they pay homage to the history. They pay homage to themselves. Like they don't overthink this. And I think that's the difference. I think America has still failed to learn the real basic premise of this tournament or this exhibition, in that it's important, but the key is to make it important without acting like it's that important. Europe's figured it out.
I don't disagree with anything you just said. You're 100% on the ball. You were the one on site. You have traditionally been a big fan of this tournament, and I trust your opinion. But
here comes the but.
In this case, you're wrong.
All right, let's hear it.
You're not wrong, but I have a differing opinion. I shouldn't say
that's
you're wrong.
The whole you're point wrong. Of the pod, Ty. It's okay to disagree. What do you got?
I know it's great. This is the end of an era for Europe. They have hung on to these traditions too long. I do agree that the U.S. has not quite, they haven't quite figured out the team thing, right? Where the Europeans have a lot of pride in this tournament, and that goes a long way. But what I've learned in my research and leading up to this tournament, just all the deep dives I've done, are you can really control a lot of things with the setup of the golf course, and that is becoming more and more prevalent. I listened to Bones, Jim Bones McKay, longtime caddy for Phil Mickelson, talk about when he showed up on site in Paris 3 years ago. He looked at the golf course and he said, the Americans don't stand a chance. The rough was thick, the fairways were narrow, and we had a bunch of young bombers. And he just said, the Americans are really going to struggle with this golf course, and they did. And then listening to Chandler Whittington, the head pro at Hazeltine, talk about how much goes into working with the captains and the traditional, you know, Ryder Cup representatives from the U.S. for years, making sure that the golf course suits the players on the U.S. side, right? Making sure there is a home field advantage. I know that the course probably appears to be linksy, but I don't think it's going to play linksy at all. The ball's going to be in the air. I don't think that they're going to be running the ball along the ground a whole lot, European style. I just think that these players that we look at in the past as virtual locks to play well, I just don't think it's in the cards right now. I don't think you can look at – I'm very concerned about a lot of players for Europe. My concerns for the U.S. are pretty narrow. I mean, you can get down and talk about a guy like Harris English and Daniel Berger, but they're not going to play a whole lot, I don't think. So talking about the guys who are maybe going to have to play four or five matches, I'm concerned about Koepka just because we just don't know where his game's at. I'm concerned about Morikawa. He's battling an injury, and he just really hasn't been the same since he won overseas.
And this doesn't feel like a good fit for Morikawa. This course does not feel like a good fit for him at all. He's a fader. There's a lot of holes that are right on the water where if you fade it too much or it's bad, it goes into the water. And he's not long. Like, he's not short, but he's also not long. And that I worry about a guy like him. And he can't putt. He's not a great putter. He made every putt at the Open. I'll give you that. He made every putt at the Open. Traditionally, though, he's still not a very good putter.
Yeah, I'm also concerned about Dustin Johnson. On a lighter note, it's possible he could be seeing ghosts here. I do have to ask you a question. Did you find your way standing in any bunkers along the 18th fairway?
I did. I did stand in some bunkers. I also stood
in some... They have a plaque?
They have... I didn't see that plaque, but... I didn't see a plaque, but there's a lot of areas where you are standing, like on 9 especially. We were walking up 9 to catch 8, where the players were the Americans were coming in to play 8 and 7. We were going to try to see them play 7 and 8 coming in and 9. And basically, so we're walking up the 9th fairway, not up the fairway, but, you know, just alongside of it. And you're basically just walking through these bunkers, these waste areas. And so that's the thing. When these players get there, there's going to be footprints, there's going to be tracks and everything into these bunkers. And they're going to hit into some of these. Like, there's no doubt about that in my mind. So... this is where, again, it's going to be really challenging for fans. It's going to be really challenging for the players. It's a lot like, I think, I want to say who's the one who said it this morning, if it was Morikawa or if whatever, it reminded him of Kiowa, that it feels a lot like Kiowa. And it's not a surprise. Pete Dye designed that course as well. But I think they're going to, guys who played well at Kiowa may not be bad guys to look at here, but the guy who played the best at Kiowa was an assistant captain.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, was it Phil Mickelson? Probably not. Here's a list of guys I'm concerned about on the European side. You tell me what you think.
Sure.
I'm concerned about Paul Casey. I think that he played okay this year, showed up at times, but I'm concerned that he's past his prime. I'm concerned about Tommy Fleetwood. I honestly don't know how he ended up on this team. I don't think he's been playing good golf. I don't think the course suits him, and I just don't think there's a whole lot going for him. I'm concerned about Sergio Garcia. A lot of people are going to say this is where you can count on Sergio to show up. But I also thought Sergio would show up at the Masters and the U.S. Open, and he didn't. He was pretty much non-present in the majors this year. I'm concerned about Rory for obvious reasons. Rory he's a good Ryder Cup player, but if you look at his record, he's won less than half of his matches, right? If you count halves and losses, he's won less than half. So I don't think he's a guy you can look at and say, mark him down for 4 points. I don't think that's fair. Concerned about Lowry. What has he done since he won in Ireland? I don't know exactly what they were thinking there. Ian Poulter, again, a guy who he could show up and play great. He's traditionally great in these scenarios, but he may be past his prime. Tyrrell Hatton just has not shown me anything over here. And guess where we are? We're in the US of A. And then lastly, I'm concerned about Lee Westwood, similar to Ian Poulter and Paul Casey. I just think maybe a little bit past their prime. And if they don't get hot, they could really fade quickly. And those are, I didn't talk about Bernd Wiesberger, right? Because I don't think Bernd Wiesberger is going to play a whole lot of matches. I'm talking about guys that are going to have to play well. And I have a lot of concerns. I see maybe three or four names out of 12 that are going to be in 2 years on that European Ryder Cup team if this team loses. Right there, I do honestly think this is the end of an era. I have five quick reasons. I don't want to get long-winded here, but
No,
five quick reasons
this is
why I
all
think the
very
U.S.
compelling stuff. I can't wait to talk about some of these. Go ahead, keep going.
These are the reasons that I think that the U.S. is going to clean up. I really do. It's a bomber's venue. I think it's going to be bomb and gouge. The setup is going to, I mean, even if you haven't seen it, you just know that a lot goes in to winning these Ryder Cups, and the home field advantage is forced and made. I mean, they will make it a home field advantage. I'm going to call this youthful exuberance. This U.S. team is young, but they're not too young, right? I was shocked today when I saw that Dustin Johnson's 37 years old. That blows my mind. He's the oldest player on the team. If you don't know that, I mean, I know you do, but we're on U.S. soil. There's not going to be a ton of European fans. There will be some. I mean, the European fans that live stateside, or it's not impossible to get to the U.S., so there'll be some. I've alluded to number four. The European team, I think, is washed, and that's just an opinion. And luckily, come Sunday night, we're going to know the answer to that. And number five is one that might catch you off guard. It's no Phil or Tiger. I think that has probably played a lot into the lack of a team feeling when you have someone in the room who's really bigger than the team. It's hard for a team to rally around that and come together and really feel like they're an equal when Tiger and Phil are in the room. I think the lack of Tiger and Phil, I mean, if you look at the eldest person in the room, most accomplished person, you're going to look at Dustin Johnson. He's not really the ego that's going to intimidate any of these young guys. I really think that these guys are going to play well. And again, they're not the youngest guy, I think, is Morikawa, who's 23 or 24. So, or Scheffler, maybe. But this team is going to be ready to go. I don't think they're going to have to lean on guys like Daniel Berger, Harris English. But those other, a guy like Scottie Scheffler might have to play a lot because he's probably going to be paired with Bryson DeChambeau. So, a lot's going to depend on that, but I just think there's more questions on the European side, which is going to surprise a lot of people. I think a lot of people would have a varying opinion to that, but I think the U.S. is going to roll.
Here's where I do agree with you on a couple of things. First of all, I do think the challenge for the Europeans is going to be stamina. You do have some guys that are a little older, and it is a tough walk. It's a really tough walk, and they are doing that walk now every day, but you even saw it. I saw it a little bit today on the live from coverage. The walk from the putting green to the first tee is uphill and over a bridge and across this way, and it's just a lot. Like, it's a lot of steps. It's a lot of walking. It's a lot of uneven lies. It's a lot of standing, against the side hill. It's a lot of that. It really is. And I don't know how much that favors a 48-year-old Lee Westwood. Although I saw Helen walking and doing markings yesterday, and I gotta tell you, he is marrying up. That guy, she's a beautiful woman in person. Good God Almighty. I looked at my wife and I said, "Hey, I think that's Westwood's wife." And she's like, "Oh, really? Who's Lee?" I'm like, "Yeah, just we don't need to talk about it, but let's just say that she's right there." And yeah, she was good looking. Good Lord. Anyway, but you have Westwood at 48. Serge is in his 40s. You have Poulter in his 40s. Casey's in his 40s. Stamina's a thing. You know, I don't dispute that at all. Especially now that I've walked it, I can tell you I'm 40. I'm tired. And I only did it once. You know, so I can't imagine what it's like for those guys every day out there doing it. They're great athletes and they're used to walking, so I think they can handle it. But is there a chance that on late Saturday, with the pressure and the concentration of a 36 whole day on a Saturday, that somebody like Poulter could feel a little tired? Yeah, and is it? And it's going to be harder to tell a Poulter or a Surge or a Lee Westwood that you're going to go 36. So I don't think you can depend on those guys going for four matches. I don't think, you know, I do think that's fair to suggest that Harrington's going to have to be a lot more creative in his choosing of pairings than Stricker is. I don't think that's going to be as big an issue for Stricker as it is for Padraig Harrington. So I'll give you that one, 100%. That's going to be the challenge. We will find out if they are washed very early in this match, I think. I don't think they are, because I think the things that they do well are things that are not washable. Like, Poulter can putt. Fitzpatrick can putt. Westwood can't putt, but Lee Westwood can ball strike with the best of them. Sergio's not a great putter, although Sergio is maybe one of the greatest clutch Ryder Cup putters in the history of this game. And that guy's record is untouchable. Like, his Ryder Cup record is better. He's got 25 Ryder Cup points in his lifetime. I mean, that's seven guys on the U.S. team don't have 25 points combined. That's incredible. Just when the money's on the line, Serge makes everything in this event. Rory doesn't make a ton of putts, but in this event, he seems to make putts. And there's no explanation for it. I can't figure it out. So I like the moxie of the European team more than I like the American team. Here's why I think the Americans are in deep trouble. One, they're still way more concerned about ping pong and team dinners than they are playing golf and just having a tournament and going out there and doing the best they can. All I heard about in these goddamn press conferences over the last 2 days is who's playing ping pong against each other. I swear to God, if I have to hear one more time about who's the best ping pong player in the Ryder Cup room, I'm going to throw up. You never hear that about the European team. The Euros never talk about ping pong and dinners and, oh, we're going to get together and bond as a team. You never hear them do that. Why? Because they don't need to advertise it. For them, it's not a big deal. Like, it's just they also seem to not, they don't have to fake it. They don't have to fake like each other. They just do it naturally. I watched them take their team photo yesterday, and they're yucking it up. They're joking. They're laughing. They're having fun. Basically, Stricker has to force Koepka over to DeChambeau on the practice range yesterday. I didn't see that part, but I just saw the conversation. It's like, do you really think Brooks Koepka took the time like to want to go talk to DeChambeau? No, I'm sure they were like, oh, this is on TV. This will look good. Go say something. And I'm sure that's what it was. The U.S. always feels forced, always feels manufactured, never feels authentic. And it also feels cold. On the first tee yesterday, Harrington waited for all of his guys to hit and then went out and followed. He would send out assistant captains or whatever. You saw Stenson go out with a group or whatever. I saw these big armies of people walking in each group yesterday. Stricker and Furyk are in the first group. Then here comes Zach Johnson and Davis Love in the next group. Phil and whoever else is Fred Couples in the last group. And you're just like, we got five goddamn assistant captains. Like, why do we have five assistant captains? And it feels cold. Like, nobody's talking to players. They're talking to reps. They're talking to different coaches. They're talking to different people. And they're not, and there's just nothing to it. There's nothing to it. I see way more chemistry and camaraderie on the Euro team. You're right. Maybe this is the last hurrah, because there's a lot of guys that are entering that phase where they may not be factors anymore. You might be 100% right on that. But I think for one more ride, Custer's last stand, if you will, I don't know if the Americans have enough to beat that. Plus, they're on a golf course that isn't too different from what European guys have played on. So you're not giving them anything different or unique. The golf course is going to play difficult with the weather, and we've got a team of absolute garbage putters. Like, other than Spieth, who do you trust with your life to make a 10-footer on the American team?
Well, Patrick Cantlay, but that's about it.
But even Patrick Cantlay over the summer couldn't make anything. Like, we remember that, right? Like, Cantlay got hot here over the last couple weeks, and I love Cantlay. But he hasn't, but I mean, Cantlay might be second on the list. But I mean, would you trust Morikawa with your life for a 10-footer?
No. Maybe Xander Schauffele.
Maybe Xander Schauffele. And again, I'll take Morikawa if it's at Royal St. George's. But other than that, I guess not. You know, I don't think I'd take him there. You know, DJ, you're right. This is a house of horrors for DJ. Like, this has not been the world's greatest golf course for DJ. Koepka, I mean, I read the Golf Digest article. It came out a couple weeks ago, excerpts, but I read the full interview today in Golf Digest. You can tell this isn't his bag. Like, he just doesn't want to, he doesn't, he could take or leave this event. Totally could. So that's a problem. I think the Bryson DeChambeau thing, it's like, yeah, we can put it aside for the weekend. Can they? I don't know. I just feel like there's no grit guys on the team. Maybe Berger, maybe Spieth, and Thomas. Those guys are gritty guys. Everybody else isn't. I'm just concerned. I think if you're asking me who's going to be clutch, well, it ain't going to be Tony Finau because I've seen that. He ain't clutch. It ain't going to be Daniel Berger. I don't see that. It ain't going to be, like, DJ hasn't been clutch all year. And Jordan, who I think has been great, and I love Jordan, but you don't think Jordan can hit a foul ball or two out here? I mean, like, I'm a little nervous. I'm nervous for this American team. And again, they just, everything just felt cold and different. I just don't love it. I don't love it. And it's not a rip on Stricker, although, man, I feel like he was really paint by numbers with these captain picks. I felt like there's no creative thinking in this captain's picks. These guys are all fine players. That's great. But it's not like he went out and took a gamble on somebody. And I would have had more respect for that.
Who's your biggest snub on the U.S. side?
Well, again, everybody talks about course fit. I like the fact that Harrington said, forget course fit. I don't give a rat's ass. Give me a guy who can putt. Give me a guy who's a good locker room guy. Give me a guy who can ball strike. Give me a guy who wants to be here. Like, give me those guys and I'll win. I at least admire that he basically took all the analytics and said, that's fine, but my eyes tell me that this guy's going to be the better player. I'm going to take him. And I just wish Stricker would have done that with somebody like a Kevin Na. I don't want to say Patrick Reed, because I think Reed did himself in a little bit on that. But there is no question that Reed wants to be there. There's no question. Now, his health, that could have been a factor, and that's legit. But I have a feeling that he was never going to take Reed. He just never was. I also know he was never going to take Kevin Na. He was never going to take Kevin Kisner. He was never going to take Max Homa. Those guys were just never options for him. It's like he had his boys, and I feel like he had his boys months in advance.
I get that feeling too. I'm not so sure Kevin Na checks the box of a good locker room guy.
Good putter though. You know, really good putter.
He would have brought the putter. Would have brought the putter. You know, Kisner, I'm not sure that there's enough work in the last year. I don't hate Stricker's picks. I think he went with potential. Who can really go out and go low and dominate and take the match and not just, you know, ham an egg and stay in there and maybe make a putt on 18 to steal a half a point. I think he went with the players that could take over. I mean, unless you want to save this for the end, who's kind of your MVP pick on both sides? If you had to pick one,
I think it's Rahm on the Europe side because he's the best player, right? So if Rahm goes out and has a bad weekend, I think that's bad news for Europe. But if he goes out and does what he needs to do, remember, they only need 14 points to keep the cup. And so if Rahm goes out there and gets them 4 points, you just all you got to do is cobble together the other 10. And you got enough guys who can do that. If Rahm goes out though and struggles and has a tough time making this happen, then things could get ugly for Europe. They need Rahm to be the beast, the animal. They want to know they could pair him against DeChambeau or pair him against Kepka's group or DJ's group and feel like we're not outgunned. Because you know that's how that's going to play out. Harrington is going to put him up against somebody's top team with the hope they can take care of business.
Is Rahm probably going to play with Sergio, it looks like, from the practice pairings?
I did not see that because they haven't been paired together yet, I don't think. They might have got paired together today. But Rahm yesterday was with, and I think Harrington's, he doesn't do the pod thing. I don't think Harrington's doing pods. I think he's just kind of feeling things out. Yesterday, Rahm teed with Fleetwood, Hatton, and Lowry. And I watched them play a hole or so. And, you know, the interesting thing is, I think, I wouldn't be surprised if Casey and Poulter are paired together. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think there's a really good chance that we see Hatton get paired with somebody like Fitzpatrick because they can kind of help each other out. Hatton's long enough to maybe offset Fitzpatrick's length, especially in a foursomes or an alternate shot where you can use Fitzpatrick's putter and his iron game successfully. I think that could be an interesting pairing. Rory, I think, could be a good partner with anybody, but like they paired him with Thomas Peters at Hazeltine, and that worked out really well. There's a good chance that maybe they say, Bernd Wiesberger, you play with Rory. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the order that they go in because you get a chance to get a younger guy in the game, and they might need Bernd Wiesberger to play 3 to 4 matches. And if that's the case, you need to have a partner that you feel good with putting him with. Like, you're not going to pair Wiesberger with Victor Hovland. You might pair Hovland with McIlroy. That might make sense too. But yeah, I don't think it's Serge and Rahm. I don't think that's a cinch. It's possible, but I don't see that as a guarantee.
Yeah, I'm just reading the tea leaves from the practice rounds today. I will say that watching the first tee shot of the practice round today, a lot of guys watch their, I don't know exactly what one looks like, but they watch their tee ball for a long time. Concerns about Rahm and the stomach bug thing, it was a pretty quick tee pickup on one.
Yeah, none.
And that tells me he might be feeling pretty good this week, and that could be terminal to the U.S.'s chances, really, like you kind of alluded to. So I would certainly go with Rahm on the European side. I don't see anyone else stepping up. I'm sure the person they would love if Rahm's not the MVP on the European side would be Victor Hovland, because he's kind of the future guy there. You know, not really a glue guy or a rah-rah guy, but certainly a guy that Europe would love to look at in 2 years and say, oh, remember, you know, when he got his 3 points last time around, he's a guy we can count on.
And Hovland has some match play too. Hovland's played a lot of match play in the last few years with his time at Oklahoma State and the U.S. Amateur. Like, he's played a lot of high pressure, high leverage matches, and he's come out on top in a lot of them.
Sure. On the U.S. side, I honestly think if the U.S. wins, it'll be Spieth or Justin Thomas. Right now, they're the face of the team. They pretty much, I'm sure, demand to play together. They love playing together. And I think that those two guys are going to play every match. I don't think, unless one gets really cold, I think that those guys are going to play together, and they're probably going to steal, hopefully, a lot of points for the U.S. and be kind of the face of the tournament. So
I do agree with you. I think as those two go, and I think you're right, I don't think there's any question those two are being paired together. There's a chance that Spieth might go out with Scheffler because of the Texas thing or whatever, but I think he's going to listen to those two guys, and I think those two guys are going to go out. I think it makes sense, and I think they will play well. And Spieth, I think, is very agreeable. You know, Spieth has proven that he basically can win with any partner because he's a good teammate. Like, he likes playing in these things, and you know, he's had great success with Reed. He had success with DJ in the President's Cup. He had success with Thomas in the last Ryder Cup. So he's a good a good guy for that. I think as he and Thomas go, you're right. I think it makes sense. But the player to watch is Bryson, because who pairs with him? Who do you put him with? Does he play alternate shot? Because you know off the tee he's banana sandwich. You don't know if he's going to hit one in the fairway or not. He is capable of some foul balls because he's swinging out of his shoes. Does that make sense in an alternate shot? And if that's the case, who do you pair him with? I didn't get any inkling as to who that could be. Now, the group that I saw Spieth play with yesterday was Thomas, him, DeChambeau, and Scheffler. So are you thinking DeChambeau-Scheffler as a group? And maybe you are, but that feels like it's either that's feast or famine, doesn't it? That feels really combustible.
I think anyone you put DeChambeau with is potentially combustible, but I do think it's going to be Scheffler to start. That's certainly a group that could change, though. I mean, if it doesn't go well, they're not going to throw those two out in the next match. No chance. I think that JT and Spieth are going to stay together again, as long as somebody doesn't go ice cold. But so that might mean that Scheffler might have to play a lot of matches, because I do think they're going to want to. I just think for the potential aspect, they're going to want DeChambeau out there. And I really shocked if DeChambeau plays well this weekend. I think he's really going to, relish the fan backing, and because it's going to be pretty much, as long as he's playing decently, he won't be able to do any wrong this week, right? He's going to love that the fans are behind him, and that really could propel him to play well. I think he's cynical enough that could really help him. We'll see.
You might be right, but I think it's if DeChambeau plays well and puts points on the board, I think the Americans win. But you saw in Paris, like, they paired him with Tiger, they paired him with all these guys, and they couldn't get anything going with DeChambeau. And some of that was the course. Like, the course didn't set up for DeChambeau at all. But, you know, I don't know. Like, he's been the sort of combustible feast or famine element of the United States team all season. We'll see if that translates this weekend. But if he plays well, like, if he's driving it in the fairway, the Americans I think they got to say they'd feel pretty good about that. And the other guy is DJ. If he comes back to life a little bit here and can be a leader and, you know, have some grit in some of these matches, that'd be great. I haven't seen that from him, though, this year. I just haven't. Although I did like in the press conference, they asked him, why do you think Europe's winning so many Ryder Cups? You know, they're just playing better than we are. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. You know, it's not rocket science. They've just played better. It's like
classic.
He's the best.
Did you hear Cantlay's gin discussion?
Yeah, you know, I heard a little bit of it. I have to go back and re-listen to it because I think he was interrupted by DJ. Right? I think DJ came in at the end and just said something like, "My answers will not be as long as Patrick's on any of these." These questions. But I like Cantlay. I like that he's thinking about this stuff. I'm okay with that. Like, I like Cantlay kind of at least thinking about it and being articulate in his response. He didn't give us coach speak, and I appreciated that.
Right. I like Cantlay a lot. I think, you know, you hope the hot hand stays, but he could be integral to the U.S.'s chances this week. There's a lot. That's, well, this is a silly thing to say, but it's going to come down to how they play on the course. It's going to have nothing to do with how it sets up on paper. So that's the best part about sports is we talk about it, and then finally we get to see it through. So I'm pretty pumped. I wish it was Thursday night. I wish I could wake up and watch Ryder Cup golf tomorrow. I did get the bomb dropped on me this week that I haven't been to the cabin, which is a terrible thing, since July 4th weekend, so we are going to the cabin this weekend.
Oh boy.
But I will figure it out.
Is there Wi-Fi up there? Do you have Wi-Fi?
To every shot, I promise.
Do you have Wi-Fi up there?
We do not have Wi-Fi, but her dad's place is just a 9-iron from there, so I can buzz over there, and he has all the setup to watch. So
I was going to say, all you got to do is just make sure you have the cock. Make sure you have Peacock, so you can just go ahead and get that on an app on your phone, and you can watch that. It'll be good.
We'll we'll make sure we're watching. Kayla knows it's a priority.
It's a priority. So. Come on now. And then you and I are set up now for a long break on the golf podcast because we're not going to break down the RSM Classic or the Houston Open anytime soon. But here's what we will do. Maybe if anything crazy happens during this Ryder Cup, you and I should get back in here next week and break this down, talk about all things Ryder Cup next week. And then after that, we'll go into a little hiatus and only come out when I put the bat signal up for some stuff. Like if we hear Tiger wants to play in an event in the winter, we're going to get on the pod and we're going to talk about that. Same thing, if anything big pops up, we want to have that. So let's watch the Ryder Cup this week, Ty, and let's be prepared to chat about it maybe next week.
Sounds good. I'll be here.
My friend, happy third time through on the fatherhood thing. I hope it goes well. Continued success. Love to the wife. All that jazz. And we got to play a little golf before the season ends here.
Sounds good.
Love it. And once again, if you want to listen to the podcast anytime, I want to appreciate you sharing it out. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those places that we give podcasts. And I swear we're on every damn platform you can think of. So go find it, put it out there, share it, do all that jazz. Rate it 5 stars. And podbean.com is where you can find our site. timpodcast.podbean.com, facebook.com/timpodcast. Send me an email at timpodcast1@yahoo.com if you have any questions that you'd like to share with the masses. I read anything that you send. You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Tim Anderson, on Twitter at Tim Anderson Pod. I think I got it all. I think I did it all in one breath or two. We made it from there. Until next time, for Ty, this is Tim saying keep your head up, and we'll see you.
Welcome back.